Our agenda is here. The goal, I think, of what we're doing today is to try and knock out as many issues as possible. So if we feel that we start getting kind of wrapped around the axle on any one of these issues, we should probably just table it and move on instead of trying to figure everything out on the call. And then we can have mailing list discussion on that. Anything, I'll go ahead and I guess scribe for the first hour. Do we have any additions to the agenda? Anything else that we should discuss? All right. Let's go ahead and get started. We have 7 issues today. These are all the issues that we have to deal with for the syntax. There are some issues that I didn't put on here that have to do with the API, but we can get to that later. So any additions or changes? All right. All right, first topic is issue 54, arrays of IRIs. The link to the issue is here. Basically, this issue has to do with what do we do with if there's an ID with an array of multiple IRIs, basically strings. And I guess the proposal is basically not support this right now, to either ignore it or throw an exception. So there are four things that we could do with this. We could use only the first value in the ID array. We could use the last value in the ID array. We could do we could modify the ID value. Basically, we can modify the array and just shrink it down to either the first value or the last value, for example, when we do expansion or compaction. Or we could throw an exception. So any thoughts on, I think, Marcus, you said that you'd like to throw an exception. I said that, you know, the first value would be fine with me. Any other options that we can think of?
I suppose we could also say that it's implicitly a list. Now, if we add set, then that would be a very arbitrary decision.
Mm-hmm. But what would the result then be? For example, if you convert it to purple, that was like the original problem with it, wasn't it?
If you convert it to a list, then the value would be the value of the first element of the B node, which points to the first item in the list, which is the same it is in say turtle. You can have a list be in a subject position.
Yeah,
but that is sort of tying our hands for other things we might say want to do with it in the future. So, I'd say probably not do that if we think that we're likely to want to adopt this syntax for some future capability, then we should probably throw an exception so that we don't inadvertently get some backwards compatibility issues. Although I think it's pretty unlikely that, given the discussion on some of the other issues, that we're going to want to go this way. We'll probably use some other keyword that's intended to make the meaning more explicit.
Yeah, I think I certainly agree with either taking the first value or really, I think the safest thing that we can do right now is store an exception. If you have an array that and any item in that array is a string value, just store an exception at that point. I think that's the thing that protects us the most and gives us a little bit of time to figure out if we actually do want to support this type of syntax.
I agree.
Okay.
I suppose as a corollary, if the value of ID were null, it should probably, it would just be as if the if there were no value there at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe what we should do is just have a general, I forget what the spec says right now, but I think we specifically said null, we don't do anything with null, and we might want to change that and say if null is found, you're basically either, you know, in the context you're clearing something in the context, or if it's found in the document, you basically remove it from the document when you do something like a compact or an expand. It's ignored or removed. Effectively, but that's a different thing. Okay, so maybe the proposal are, would there be any objections to throwing an exception? Okay, so if a string is found in an array that is the value of the ID key, JSON-LD processor must throw an exception.
Isn't it enough to say if the value for ID is an array?
That's used in the multiple graph syntax at the moment.
Yeah. What you say might be true. When we're done with the spec, but it's not true now. So we use an array syntax for ID for the multiple graphs issue.
Probably moving away, but we do this incrementally.
Yeah.
I mean, all right.
Okay, so if a string is found in an array that is the value of the ID key, a JSON-LD processor must throw an exception.
Could you add a note about... I just type it.
Okay. Lane asks, does it complicate processors to detect this versus just leaving the behavior undefined? The danger with leaving it undefined is that we will have implementations that do different things. So if we leave it undefined, some processors might say, oh, well, I know how to correct this. I will just use the first value, whereas another processor would use, the last value or whatnot. So in this case, we should be very specific. Okay, all right, so this is resolved. We want to move away from arrays and ID, I think, but we want to have something fairly well thought out before we move away from that stuff. Okay, good. So this is resolved. Let me go ahead and note that in the issue. That resolved. Okay. Good. Okay, so the next one is the difficult one, I think. The next topic is issue 63, provenance in JSON-LD. This is one of those things that we may need to skip. All right, so... this has to do with basically a graph syntax. for JSON-LD, and we can make it pretty simple. We can make the discussion pretty simple by saying we're not going to do anything until the RDF working group has decided something, or we could spend some time kind of discussing the various proposals that are on the table. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, there is also issue 68 is even titled multiple graph syntax, but I think that maybe we've confused the issues at two points in both of the threads, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And one of the problems perhaps is that we sometimes say multiple graphs when we mean multiple subjects in one graph. Meaning the array and ID at the moment. But I believe that we could probably close this specific issue with a reference to issue 68.
Okay, let's see. Well, so I think the one thing that there's a proposal here to do is to not specify name graph syntax until the RDF working group completes their work on name graphs.
Yeah.
We may want to get that down as a resolution, as a look. We discussed this. It's funny because strangely enough, this work is going to probably go into the RDF working group. I don't think anyone would question us on that.
It might be that this issue, well, it's confusing because for this issue to work, we would have to have literal graphs. And then I believe this issue specifically asks for being able to use literal graphs as subjects.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we should entirely fold that into the graph discussion, because if you can have graphs, you can have ID for graphs, and then you should reasonably be able to use them as subjects.
Right.
Well, that's not clear. Yeah. I guess my opinion is that I think the syntax for multiple graphs is actually probably pretty well set. I don't see the RDF working group making any drastic changes to trig. I think n quads will sort of remain as a way. So really, it's about some way of providing a name for a graph that's in there. So I think the types of things the RDF working group are working on are more the semantics behind multiple graphs. And I don't really see that saying, well, we have to wait for them to decide on the semantics before we specify the syntax, when it would be just yet one more syntax in a growing set, really, really holds much weight right there. With regards to, sort of because these are separated, I think this is really about provenance, which is really an application of multiple graphs, I believe. And I think there is definitely some, I think that we can hold off discussion on the provenance issue, and I would support putting this issue on hold until there is some consensus around expressing provenance as part of multiple graph syntaxes. But that does not carry over to 68, where I think we probably can, if we decide we want to spend the time on it, actually provide some syntactic support for multiple graphs in JSON-LD.
Okay. So your proposal, Greg, is to put discussion on provenance on hold. But we may discuss syntax for multiple graphs.
Right. And I suppose provenance is an issue that goes beyond a particular serialization. So whatever is done with provenance in terms of asserting information in an abstract quad store would hold in JSON-LD without any special consideration.
Okay. All right. So the go ahead, Nicholas.
Yeah. I basically agree with what Greg said. The I also comment on that in the issue, because what the issue speaks of could be done without using named graphs at all. If you just describe your information resource with created and publisher and other provenance-related properties, you have provenance information. And if your information resource contains triples, then that's enough. And that's the way provenance is used today without using named graphs. So then if you want to describe the graph itself with provenance information, that would be possible if we support that by resolving issue 68.
Mm-hmm.
Just as Greg said, but I think that provenance can be done without it. It's the self-referentiality of named graphs is kind of like the turtles all the way down problem. It's when you start to describe a graph, you create another graph describing that graph, and you can go on forever doing that.
Right. Okay, so I guess the proposal would be to, let's see, place discussion, let's see, provenance, let's see, put the discussion for provenance on hold, and I guess that's basically it, until what point. Greg, you said that until the RDF working group.
Well, I think until well, I don't know. I just say put it on hold until more of information is available. But it seems to me that the working group is the provenance is a driver for multiple graphs, and that once the multiple graphs issue is settled, and it sort of seems like they might be getting towards something that will settle that, then probably provenance will have something to work with, and that would be then an application of the multiple graph usage, which would be sort of pretty much the same in whatever serialization it was used, I presume.
Okay. Okay, so the proposal is put the discussion of provenance on hold until the RDF working group produces a proposal for provenance. Does that work?
Yeah.
That in the issue. This is issue 68, I think. No, 63. 63. Yeah. That's resolved. All right.
We probably need a new label for this, to indicate that it's not really resolved, it's just on hold.
Ah, right.
I'll take care of that.
Okay, thanks. All right. Next topic is issue 64, make clear how type and language coercions work. Thought we had dealt with this, but right. So sure. this issue has to do with what happens. Basically, how do you override things like language? So For example, if somebody uses expanded form, they specify that the language for a document is Japanese in the context, and then later on in the document, they use expanded form and produce a value for something that's a plain literal. The question is, does the Japanese language specified in the context apply to that expanded form, or is the expanded form explicit in that if the author wanted to have the Japanese language applied, they would have specified it, and since they didn't, the value is just a plain literal in expanded form. So the other, I guess, question that comes up is what happens if you set language to null in the context or any subtree, in any JSON subtree. And the proposal is that if language is set to null, then it clears the language information. So are there any questions about this or any alternative proposals to how we deal with language?
So just to clarify, when you mean an expanded form, you mean when we are using the syntactic object with an at literal, rather than a something which has been subject to a expanded transformation.
I think so. If my definitions are the same as your definition, so I guess another way to put this is that coercion does not apply to expanded form. So if somebody specifies something in expanded form, you do not apply any coercion rules to that value. So if you do foo and then value bar. Right, so if you do that, then no coercion rules apply.
And that's true specifically for the value expanded form. So if I had, for instance, a list with an array of strings, the strings within that array would be subject to coercion.
Yes, I believe so.
And similarly, if I had an ID, that ID would not be subject to coercion.
If you had an ID.
So if I have... If I have that form and it is of a, well, it's, let's say it's more like a foo. Like that. If foo was coerced, then the idea, I mean, this isn't anything new, right? So if
yeah.
Because I'm expressing it explicitly as an ID, if even if foo has coercion, then bar would not be coerced. It would be explicitly an ID. We're just making this, we're saying the same thing for value, even though foo might have a coercion to an ID or a date for that matter,
right.
Because we're using that explicit value syntax that it is not, there is no coercion applied.
Right. Anyone have any questions on this before we get to the proposal? So there are two proposals here. So the one proposal is when expanded form is used, no type coercion rules apply to the value expressed in the expanded form. The second proposal is setting language to null in the context clears any coercion rules for language for the JSON subtree. Setting language to null in an expanded value clears any language information slash has no effect that's mostly to clarify a question that Marcus had asked in the post.
I think to say it clears no any language information is we're being redundant. So this is consistent with the use of in other places where, let's say, we had ID null, it's just as if there was no ID. So if you have language null, it's just as if there is no language. You can only have that in an explicit context where we've just said that no language would apply.
Right. So I guess that, yeah. Okay, you're right. That is.
So I would just remove the clears any language form slash bit from that phrase.
Okay. All right. So the second proposal would then be setting language null in the context clears any coercion rules for language for the JSON subtree. Full stop.
Unless we have a more generic description of how null is treated sort of universally within JSON LD. So I don't want it to be ambiguous if you do happen to use language null. I think in general, unless otherwise specified, the use of null with a with any key.
Mm-hmm.
This, it was not stated in the first place.
Yeah.
Except for the coercion.
Right. So I don't think we have any language right now, and I think we should probably raise another issue revisit null. But I think we have some clarity on it now, whereas before we didn't, meaning that if you use null in the context, you're clearing coercion rules for the value. And if you use null in the document, it's a no-op. You basically, feel free to remove it, or you must remove it from the expanded and the compacted form for JSON LD. And I think that works across everything, or at least it seems like a fairly simple rule that works. Okay, so let's go back to these. Actually, before we go back to the proposals, Nicholas, can you explain what's going on with the code you just typed out?
Yeah, that was just in case we needed clarification about compact and expanded, because in the expanded form, we have removed the language, the context, including the language in the context, and you only need to fold it into literals with the language, whereas in the compact form, the name value for name there has no language because it is explicitly coerced into a string. But I don't think there is anything strange with that or has any bearing on what we've said.
Okay.
So that would mean that add language at the context level just applies to terms that are not coerced to any type?
Yeah, I think we've defined that. I don't know
that's how it works in most RDF languages.
Yeah, that's fine for me, but I think it's not in the spec yet, at least.
Okay, it's not. Then we might add it. Want to add it. We should add it. We have to add it. That's the only way to, if you use language in the context, not make any plain string have that language.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Marcus, could you raise an issue on that just to make sure we don't forget to do that, please?
Yeah, we'll do that.
Okay, great. Thanks. Okay. So the first proposal up then is when expanded form is used, no type coercion rules apply to the value expressed in the expanded form. And then plus one, minus one.
Sorry.
Guys. No problem.
With no type coercion, you also mean no language coercion rules, right?
Yes. So I'll clarify that. So basically, we should say no coercion rules apply.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll put that in the resolution. Okay. When expanded form is used, no coercion rules apply to the value expressed in the expanded form. The next proposal up is what happens when you set the language to null. So setting language to null in the context clears any coercion rules for language for the JSON subtree. Both in the issue. Then mark that issue as resolved. 64, yes. Resolved. All right, next issue up is issue 65. Go ahead, Nicholas.
Yeah, should we add an issue for, I'll paste this in first, or just do a proposal for that, because we mentioned it twice now. Should we decide something about it?
Yeah, we might as well. I think it seems fairly straightforward, right?
I think so.
Okay, so yeah, let's resolve it now. So the proposal is a value of null outside of the context has the same effect as if there is no key value present at all. Should we say during? Is that 76?
I just add an issue for the use of null.
All right.
Meaning we should, that's the issue we should switch to?
I think we wanted to, we talked about separating that out so that it was more broad and we could imply it that its interpretation at place else.
Okay, so this is, I'm switching topics. Topic, use of null in JSON LD. Issue 76. So there are two proposals here. Unless otherwise specified, the use of null as a value is treated as if the value was never specified. It has no effect. And then the other one is, unless otherwise specified, the use of null as a key is treated as if the key value was never specified and values of that key are not processed.
It should be more active and say, I mean, let me update that right now.
Okay. Can you not? I've never done it. You might be able to, so.
Yeah.
I'm testing it now.
You can in JavaScript. I'm not 100% if it's valid JSON.
Possible it's not valid JSON.
No, you can't set a key to null.
Oh, yeah, an object is a string value, so it has to be a string.
Yeah, if you do stringify on that, it changes null to a string. So I don't think we should specify the second one.
Okay.
So the proposal is, unless otherwise specified, the use of null as a value must be treated as if the value was never specified.
Must be, thank you.
Okay.
What do you mean by unless otherwise specified?
Yeah, I guess.
Well, by what I mean is that allows for us to define a usage of null, for instance, in the context, if a language is set to null, it removes any coercion, language coercion, which is in effect. So that would be an explicit use of null, definition of the use of null.
Maybe we could split it into two proposals. One is if null is used in the context as a value, and one is if null is used as in the document portion.
I was trying to create language that allowed us to define uses of context so that if there is not a definition for it, it is removed, and then we can add a definition for its use in a context, and perhaps sometime we'll have another cause to define one, which where we wouldn't have to go back and revisit this because it would allow for that usage.
I don't know where else we'd find a use for null. I mean, for null, right? There are only two classes of where you are. One of them is you're in the context, and the other one is you're in the document.
All right, fine. The effect's the same. I was just trying to be clever, I suppose.
Also, in the expanded form in the document.
Wait, say that again.
It's also different if you're using it in the expanded form for some key in the document. So if you have value and at language at somewhere or at type, you can null it in there as well. So that's similar to the context.
Yeah, but if you well.
No, but it's not. Again, it would have no effect. If you had an at type null, would only be useful within either an object definition or a literal data type specification. And in the literal data type, it's explicit, right? So we said that saying language null doesn't mean anything because it's implied that it's null. It's implied there's no coercion. So setting type to null would also be redundant, as it would really convey no meaning.
Yeah, that's true.
And furthermore, any of those uses should be removed or must be removed when compacting.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm trying to catch up on the scribing. Okay, so where are we on the so the proposal is unless, or do we want to do unless otherwise specified, or do we want to just do two proposals?
Just the last question. What if you said at context equals null somewhere in the document? Does that mean it deletes the whole context?
Good question.
It would be useful, because otherwise you would have no way of, you'd have to have knowledge of all the things that had been put into an active context. So saying at context null, meaning to remove all active contexts, would be useful. In fact, you could even use it in array notation where you started off with null, meaning clear, and then you could add some other context. Values or references, which would then explicitly set what was in effect.
Yeah.
Okay. So three potential proposals then. So let's do the first one. I think that one's the easiest one, so let's do this. When add context, null is specified, it clears the active context is what we're saying.
The active context.
Okay. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
I wonder what that really means, though. If it clears by actually nulling the context, then any compact JSON where some object has context null should mean, I think, that entire object is sort of removed from the JSON LD. It's turned into plain JSON.
Well, I would say to be cleared, I think, would be say it goes back to the initial. Do we have a concept of an initial context? I think we might.
We used to. I think that it might still be around in the document.
All right.
Like it needs to set XSD and RDF or something.
Right.
Or things like that. Be at the very end of the document.
Yeah, but the only thing I have in my implementation of an initial context is a set RDF colon type to be the same as that type and makes it an ID.
Yeah, I think I removed it from the spec. The initial context, I think I removed it from the spec.
It's still in the API spec.
Okay.
But
I think having the concept of an initial context is useful even if it's empty.
Okay.
But I think some of these things might be necessary for some of the API uses. For instance, RDF type.
I don't really think we need an initial context for that.
Okay, let's push the initial context discussion off to another issue, and focus on this one a bit more. So, let's see. So the proposal is I don't know if this helps you, Nicholas. Though when context null is specified, it clears the active context. Nicholas, would you be fine with that proposal, or do you see it creating issues?
I'm not sure. I think we should push it to another issue and resolve it separately because, well, I don't know really what happens. Say if I have data with a context defining name and knows, and then I have name Nicholas knows, and then an object Manu as name, and in that object I also have context null. What does that mean?
Well, in that object, the context would be cleared completely.
Yes, but what would name then be?
It would be nothing. It would be just as if you didn't define it at all, right?
So it's sort of like it turns into a B node?
Still have an ID.
Yeah.
I mean, if it just had name, then name is not an absolute IRI, therefore it would be discarded.
Yeah.
That would just leave an empty object, which results in a node.
Yeah.
If you had an ID in there, of course, then you would pick that up because the context wouldn't have any effect on that. And of course, you might use an absolute IRI in the key form.
Yeah, exactly. So it kind of nuked stuff, but leaves the raw, the expanded things behind.
But it also allows you to use that to define a different context. So I can say
So is there, I guess my question is there any confusion about what it does? And then the second question is, if there's no confusion, are we okay with what it does? For me, the answer to both of those questions is there is no confusion, and I think I'm okay with that.
There's no confusion as to what happens. If someone uses it, they might be confused, but then they shouldn't use it.
Never stop people from using features before.
Now, when expanding, it's clear that that will go away. And when compacting, you will now have a new object with a top-level context, and any use of null down below will have been basically eliminated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so do we want to go ahead and do that proposal then about the context as well? We have three proposals kind of floating out there.
Yeah, I'd say so.
All right. So let's start off with that one since that seems to be the simplest. When context null is specified, it clears the active context. Okay, and then the next one is, is that already 78? Okay, let me move that. Okay, so that one, issue 78 is resolved then, right?
Yeah.
So what happens when context is set to null? Okay. All right. And then now we're back to issue 76. Two proposals left.
The second bit of that is null, and we can ignore that. I'll just add a comment to that. They can't be used as a key.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yep. Okay, so we only had one proposal then. No, sorry, we have two proposals. One of them is when you use null in the context, and the other one is when you use null in the document. Okay, so the use of null as a value in the context must clear the key it is associated with. That is not well-defined. The use of null as a value in the context must clear the associated term or query from the active context.
Well, so I can think of a couple of different forms here. One is I have, let's say I have term with a object definition, which is ID of some IRI and type of some IRI and et cetera. So I could continue to use that object definition. Any use of null in there would be basically the same as if it wasn't there, since I believe when I define a new term definition, it clears the coercion, any existing coercion rules for that term definition.
Yes.
Now, there is the potential of setting the ID to null, or, for instance, having a term or query which is defined to be null, which could be meant to mean that that should be, that will always expand to null and therefore be treat it as if it was null within the body of JSON-LD and removed. And then the only other use in there in the context that I can think of is for language, which is what we where we initially started with, saying that the language coercion is removed.
Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I don't want to break our train of thought here, but that thing about setting ID to null, I agree that it should mean that at the moment, but I have had an ID which I haven't had time to discuss at all, which would pertain to what we discussed previously about what did we call it? Probing for data, I think. And let me see if I can just cut and paste from my sketch here, see if you get an idea. I was thinking about something along the lines of using container to say that although this key doesn't mean an arc in the graph, you should still look at the value as JSON-LD. This is something new, and I don't think we have time to discuss it during this telecon, but that might change what ID null means. I discovered that this to be a potentially great value when I thought about my previous use of rev, because in this way I could represent the entire data and then I could link to it with meaningless terms, if you see what I mean. The is reference by would be skipped because I actually am after references, which is a relation from the object to the subject. But I can add that triple as well in the object, and then I would have my graph representation preserved. But this should be for the mailing list because it's a rather involved use case.
Okay. So your warning is that we really should be specific about what we're saying null does and which places you can use null and not things about ID. Setting ID to null, because we may find that we do something differently in the future there.
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe should we just put on hold that null discussion as well and just resolve issue 64, which was about language coercion?
Yeah, that may be the best course. Let's see. I'm looking back at issue 76 right now and thinking that issue 76 isn't really done now.
No, I just added some examples in there.
Yeah. Okay, so let's deal with the language, as Marcus said. Let's deal with the language issue. Okay, so the proposal is if null is used with language, it clears the language coercion. If language null. Is specified the coercion. Let's see if language null is specified. Language coercion. I guess language coercion is.
It's removed from the active context.
Right. Is removed from the... Okay, so if language null is specified, language coercion is removed from the active context. I guess if language null is specified in a context, language coercion is removed from the active context.
In a local context, I think is more consistent with the way that we use that, right? Because this is the definition of a local context.
Okay, so if language null is specified in the local context, language coercion is removed from the active context.
That also means that if it is in a context, if the context is an array, the last context in there, if that has language null, it clears any language appearing previously.
Yes.
Yes,
right.
Yeah, great.
Okay, so that. All right, that's resolved. Go ahead. Although we already resolved this, didn't we? 25 minutes ago, setting language to null in the context clears any coercion nulls for language in the JSON subtree. So now we're confusing, or at least I'm confusing myself on what we've already resolved. So we just resolved it twice.
Well, then we're consistent. That's good.
It's pretty clear. I'm doing it different ways, yes.
On the back. All right. Yeah. Okay, and then everything else with setting null, we're going to push off to the issues, well, whichever issue Greg just raised, 76.
76.
Okay. All right, so issue 64 is done. And we can move on, hopefully. Okay, so the next topic is issue 65, handling of data that doesn't contain triples. There. There's that. So this one deals with basically what happens when you have an empty array, an empty object, or a property, or an object that then contains something that's empty. So let's see. This really it comes down to a question of whether or not we want to support existential information, so whether or not we want to make statements such as there exists something that exists. So if you say foo colon and then you have an open close brace, the question is that information something that JSON-LD authors are going to find useful, or is it something that's going to just confuse people? So one thing that we could end up doing is when you see open, close, curly brace, we could generate a vnode identifier for it. Or if we see open, close, curly brace when you're doing compaction or expansion, we could just delete it as if it were null. So the proposals that are in the issue there are if an author wants to express existential information and have it survive the compaction expansion process, they must assign an identifier to it. So if they want to express something existential, they should at least give it a vnode identifier. The other proposal is all empty JSON arrays, all empty JSON objects must be optimized out of the output during compaction and expansion, meaning that if you have an open close curly brace, it's deleted. If you have an open close square bracket, it's deleted from the output. Marcus had another example in there, and he said, what happens when you have an ID in there, like you do ID colon test, and then you have something like EX colon, and then you have an empty array, or EX colon, and you have an empty object, and I think in, or ex colon and then null. I think in those cases, since you specified an ID, then the object sticks around, right? It's no longer an existential, or rather, it's an existential statement with an identifier of some kind. So I think that addresses Marcus's issue as well. Yeah, and Greg, for your turtle example, I guess what we're saying is that we don't support that.
Well, that's what I mean. We haven't resolved that. That's your suggestion.
The proposal, right? The proposal is that we don't support that because it's fairly meaningless data, and it could potentially confuse the group of people that we're trying to build JSON LD for, which is, you know, web developers. And when you get into, you know, philosophical discussions on existential information, their eyes tend to glaze over. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, but I tend to think that we should still generate a B node for an empty object, because although it's a philosophical edge case, the same issue arises in plain JSON. I mean, what difference is there between JSON with key and the value is an object and a key when where the value is null? I mean, this is the same philosophical question.
But null would be removed.
Yeah, in JSON LD, but there is a difference here. And if we say that an empty object is a B node, I think that we're consistent.
I think that's the natural. If you just follow the algorithms right now, it will generate a B node. And to say that it does not would be creating a special case. And I think that's what's inconsistent.
The other problem is that we currently consider list values as sort of implying a set unless we coerce it to a list. So in the general case, an empty list doesn't mean anything from the JSON LD perspective. Although if it's coerced to a list, it actually should represent RDF nil, i.e. the empty list.
I think in both cases we should remove it.
Hold on a second.
So if it's coerced to a list or not, shouldn't change if it's still there after compaction or not.
But if it's coerced to a list, then the value is an empty list, then the value is an empty list. and it's still there.
Yeah, but that comes then back to the discussion about supporting null or not, because an empty set is also an empty set. It's not nothing.
Well, there's no way to specify. In RDF, there's no way to specify an empty set.
Well... owl nothing.
Okay. All right. Well, but that's owl, I guess. That's
yeah. But and I think that we just didn't consider that to be useful enough to interpret null as something different from undefined. So that's the one special case we do. But I still think that something coerced to a list which appears as an empty list has meaning. If you serialize RDF as JSON LD and use compaction with coercion on lists, then you would end up with empty lists. So we would be destroying data if we didn't add that.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess the counter proposals are then, if it is an empty object, we assign a vnode identifier for it. If it is an empty array and it is not a list, we leave it as is. And if it is coerced to a list, then the value should be RDFS nil. Is that correct?
RDF nil. And, of course, the value, that would only be an RDF version of that value. A JSON version of that value would continue to be the empty array. Right. So we're trying to not infect RDF more than necessary, except that there are, you know, I think one of my considerations is, do these things survive a round trip to RDF? And if there's list coercion, then it would survive a round trip to RDF. If there's not, if it's a set, then it would not survive a round trip to RDF. So there's an argument that if it is coerced to a set or not to a list, that it would not survive compaction.
Yes. That might appear as counterintuitive, but I believe it's
true. In fact, I think, is that necessary? Because I believe to compact, you need to normalize. And normalizing goes through RDF, which removes the data.
Yeah, that's true.
But I didn't follow, Greg.
So part of the compaction algorithm is to normalize?
Yeah.
Correct? Normalization goes through RDF. The result of normalizing, there's when you transform this to RDF, no triple is generated. So the result of then coming back after normalization would be that there was no data there that would allow you to recreate the empty set.
I think, is it clear that you mean set, i.e. the implicit this here reference to something we don't
in JSON-LD, an array which is not coerced, in my terms, I'm calling that a set. That would be equivalent to explicitly defining it as a set. That when you generate RDF results in no triples being generated. So because that is part of the compaction algorithm, when you come back, you have no, there would be no property. That EX property would never be asserted. So you would not be able to re-represent it after in compaction.
Right.
Yes.
Is that a concern? I guess is there any piece of, and is there any document that we can think of where that's a negative?
Well, it's basically the same argument as for lists.
Mm-hmm. Well, for lists, it's a bit different, right? Because you are specifying. I think that you make a strong argument in that if you specify, if you coerce something to a list and you have open square bracket, close square bracket, you're saying that that's an empty list, right? And then that should be round-tripped. However, if you have something that's an empty set, I mean,
well,
I guess we
for
could...
For us, a set is just an unordered list, so to speak. So if you don't have a big RDF background, I think you wouldn't understand the difference.
Right.
I think if we go off and we completely divorce ourselves from all the practice in RDF, we're in dangerous territory.
Mm-hmm.
I think our objective was to try to not be tied too directly to RDF, but if we now become inconsistent, that will just create some problems, and I don't see a compelling reason to keep this. In fact, in my mind, if you take something that expresses no information and after compacting it, you continue to assert that it expresses no information, then it really isn't compact. And therefore, removing an empty array and the key that references it is consistent with doing compaction, unless there's list coercion, in which case you are making an assertion that this is an empty list, and that's in fact exactly the way RDF deals with it.
Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, what Greg said, basically. I agree. I mean, it's the people caring about RDF usually care about minute details, and we should take this under consideration, because if we don't, we will destroy data for the crowd that cares about that data very much.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with that. But we also destroy data if we don't keep it for empty sets.
Well, it depends on there is. I thought about that when we have been and when we are coming back to discussing container set, the proposal about that. Because we would get into those details there, and I think that we cannot. The only way to come around that would be to use container set to mean always add empty lists for this property if there is no. If there is no value, and that would be very noisome data. So I think that we have to be practical about that.
Particularly if you consider that this might be generated through, you know, automatically.
Yes.
And it might just throw out an empty list because there was no value, and expecting that compaction would eliminate the redundancies.
In fact, if I added that part for sets to my implementation, which uses the container set thing, I would just render my data quite useless, because I have lots of terms which have to be multiple if they're present, but I can't add that all over the place, because there are lots of different terms for different kinds of objects.
Okay, so I guess I'm wondering where we are on this. So I think that there's a proposal on the table to make it such that if there is no list coercion and an empty list is specified, it's removed from the compacted output. If there is an empty list and there is coercion information to make that into a list, then RDF nil is output. We could push the set discussion off to another issue. Or we could talk about it today and say that if an empty set is specified, well, Greg, yeah, if you could take over scribing, that'd be great.
We should push that, because there is another issue for it.
Okay. All right, so I guess then, Marcus, would you have an issue with pushing that off? I mean, we're basically saying it wouldn't be making a decision on it. We'd just be talking about what happens with empty objects in empty lists. So I think that there are three proposals here. The first proposal is...
probably fine for me.
Okay. The first proposal is if open close square bracket is specified as a
are you
value,
typing this out?
Yes, I am. If open close square bracket is specified as a value for a key in a JSON LD document, then I guess and no. Type. Forget how we're doing. Are we doing type list for list coercion? No, it's container. What are we doing now?
Container, I think we resolved.
Okay. So if no container list is specify for the associated key. Yeah, specify the value. Then the value must be removed from, and this is both compacted and expanded output.
Expanding doesn't, I don't think expanding would hit this.
What
if you just follow the expansion algorithm, I don't believe it would. I don't think the expansion algorithm will remove data other than context.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, so we should just make this for compacted output. The value must be removed from compacted output. So let's see if that proposal looks good. So if open square bracket is specified as a value for a key in adjacent LD document, and no container list is specified for the associated key, I guess we could say coercion, then the value must be removed from compacted output.
I thought we were pushing that discussion back.
We're doing container set. That's the discussion that we're pushing. This is specifically container list.
But it's no container list, so that's implicitly a set.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I don't know if it's implicitly a set. I guess no, you're right. It is implicitly a set.
But this is where JSON-LD differs from JSON in semantics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that by doing this, we're consistent with that difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I see the logical argument that Marcus is making, though. Because if we resolve this, then it means that empty sets are. So I guess.
I think the conceptual trickiness here is that when we RDF heads say set, we really don't mean that the value is a set, because we don't. We mean that.
Mm-hmm.
We have a set of triples represented by the combination of the ID, the term, and the list being the set.
Yeah.
But as a JSON developer, you might not have that in your mind.
No, but that's where the difference in the conceptual difference is between raw JSON and JSON-LD. If we had used, if we did use lists, JSON lists, i.e. JSON arrays, if we by default interpreted them as lists, then, then this would work as it does, but we don't, and that, since we don't, this is the consistent solution. But I
yeah.
See the. It's hard to see.
So I don't really work with RDF data where we say that where we work with null sets. I mean it happens. I don't think it's ever happened with me. I can see where it could potentially happen with some data set. But how do you represent a null set in RDF?
You don't. That it's either you loop over the answers or you take one answer. And if you have none, you have none. If you in different toolkits, you have different supports. But generally, you have the looping construct, and that never it returns an iterating or something
right.
to that effect. So it's more like if you know XSLT or something like that. It's
mm-hmm.
it's more. What do you say? Not lenient, but soft, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. Let's say if we go down the other route and we say that we're going to put in support for a container set, I think we're doing something that RDF doesn't do, right?
Well, No, because we already, I mean, the support for container set, although...
I meant it specifically for this. So if we do put in support for container set, that's a separate discussion, but let's say we do that, then
yeah.
What does open square bracket, you know, open close square bracket for a set mean? How do we express that as RDS?
Nothing. It means nothing.
What, does it mean L nothing, or does it mean RDF colon nil?
It means,
does it actually mean conceptually nothing? There is no representation for it.
No, it means unknown, i.e. that there is, it's as if it wasn't there.
Right, exactly. So and I guess then by that logic, well, this proposal is fine.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And if we add,
go ahead, Nicholas.
Yeah, if we added container set, we would have to explain that, because if we didn't explain it, some people might expect that if a term was defined as having a container set, that there would always be an empty list for that term in any JSON LD using that context. And since that's just so inconvenient, we shouldn't. I mean, from an RDF perspective, you would just loop over it and find nothing, so you would be fine. But for any JSON user, you would get strange data from RDF serialized as JSON LD.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Marcus, did that convince you one way or the other?
I'm not sure, to be honest.
Right.
Because, like, if you're looking at it from a JSON perspective, an empty array says something. It's not that it says, well, I don't know anything about it. It says I have an empty set there, an empty list, to be exact.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Yeah, but compaction. So we just lose it in compaction. Because in expansion it would still be there, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not really sure yet what to think.
Okay. Then let's postpone this and let's think about this a bit more. Right now I'm leaning more towards Nicholas's train of logic here, which is basically that, you know, even if we were to support container set, there is no way in RDF to actually express it. We would have to like create a new way of expressing it. I completely see your point, Marcus, which is that JSON developers might be confused by this because they're used to doing open square bracket in places and basically saying it's an empty set or it's an empty list. But the counterargument to that could be, well, the second you jump into a JSON LD document and you do compaction on it, you're in a different world. You're not, you know, there's a small nuance difference here that takes over. And that nuance difference at least is consistent in how we, you know, and how we apply the rule. Nicholas, you're in the queue.
Yeah, I think you just said what I was going to say. I was going to mention that there is a very tiny semantical difference, and in raw JSON you don't really know what an empty list means, but here we can express it succinctly and to the point with these differences being expressed.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean in plain JSON you don't know what an empty list means?
You don't know what it means semantically. You don't know if it's, well, if it's ordered or unordered. You don't know if it's an ordered list or if it's just, I have no values for this relation. You know what it means?
If you have no value, it's null. Otherwise, an array is defined as to be ordered in JSON. It's just that we changed it to unordered by default.
Well, Nicholas is talking about the semantics of it,
Yeah.
Right? That syntactically that's what it means, right? But semantically, you don't know if the developer actually meant it to be an ordered list or if they're just using that representation for a set.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, in any case, we're burning a lot of time on this, and we should probably move on. I think we might be able to. So I think where we got hung up was talking about what to do with an empty array, but I think what to do with an empty object is pretty straightforward. I think the proposal on the table right now that seemed to have consensus was if there's an empty object, you generate a bknown identifier for it. Does anyone disagree with that?
I'm on board with that.
Okay.
Me too.
So if is used in is as a value in a JSON LD document.
Hey, Mono, before you do that, since we're still on the previous proposal, and I don't have anything recorded for Marcus, it would be good, because right now, if we were to tally that up, it would all be plus ones for the previous proposal. So, Marcus, perhaps before Mono jumps in there, you can put something that we can use. Or if you're fine with just going along with that, yeah. It'd be nice to be able to resolve all this stuff over here.
It's all right. It's resolved. Okay.
All right.
Does that work, Greg?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So, use as a value in JSON.
We should probably split this issue then.
Yeah. Let's see, is there any other, I'm looking back. So the only case that we don't deal with is the first one, open square, the square bracket case. For everything else, if we generate a bnode ID, all of it just falls out. From that one decision, meaning if it's got EX, if it has another object in it or another array, it's the bnode identifier is still generated for it, so we don't get rid of it. So if open close square bracket is used as a value in a JSON LD document, then a bnode blank node identifier must be generated for the objects. So if open close curly braces is used as a value in a JSON LD document, then a blank node identifier must be generated for the object. Does that seem like the right wording?
In the normalized form. And just there, right?
It's not in the normalized form.
No.
That would not be correct for normalized form. We're talking about if it goes through.
No, it would be. If you expand, it would be kept in place. Compacting goes through normalization. Normalization has to flatten everything out, and I believe would always use a bnode identifier, even if that bnode was not used as a subject.
Yeah, okay. So if open close square braces is used as a value in a JSON LD document, then a blank node identifier must be generated for the object during normalization.
Yes.
Normalization and compaction?
Since compaction
or is that just implied?
Yeah, I think implied.
Although I think it could be argued that compaction doesn't really need to use normalization.
I don't know.
That's an API issue, but by tying this to normalization, we've We've a little, we've perhaps muddied the water a little bit.
Right. Well, at least I think we have an intent here. At least we've recorded an intent, so hopefully that's enough to remind ourselves that we had this discussion.
Right.
Yeah, I think
so.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm just so we resolved half of this and we postponed half.
Mm-hmm.
Can we create? Will someone create a new issue on the bit that we've postponed so that we can mark this issue as resolved?
Yeah, Marcus, would you be able to do that really quickly? I went ahead and marked it as this bit as resolved, but
I'll do it.
Thanks.
And then just reference that from here.
Okay. All right, that was 65. Oh, 66, multiple graph syntax. Let's skip that because it's going to, I think it would take up an entire, rest of the call to do that.
68, but yes, I agree.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so okay, so
sorry.
The media type, this is a removal of the media type of form equals compacted. Here we go, issue 69, and Marcus had raised this issue. So the question is whether or not form equals compacted actually means anything. Where form compacted doesn't really have any special structure. We kind of let the compaction algorithm do more or less whatever it wants. That may change, but for now it does more or less whatever it wants to create the most compacted document as possible. The compaction certainly depends on the context that's passed to the compaction algorithm. So different contexts would generate a different compacted form. So basically, Marcus is saying since there is no specific structure to this, it's not like normalized form where there's only one way of expressing it. Marcus thinks we should remove the media type parameter for form equals compacted. The counter argument that we have is that we actually use form equals compacted in many of the Pasteworm specifications. And the reason that we do that is we want JSON developers to be able to access the URL and get back a set of key value, a flat set of key value pairs that they can be sure that they use. So basically, if we didn't have this media type parameter in there, when they retrieved a JSON-LD document, for example, we use it for like configuration URLs, so web service endpoints. So it says, you know, the registration web service is at this URL, the login web service is at this URL, the purchase service is at this URL. So it's very flat key value pairs. But it is JSON-LD, so there is a context that's associated with it. If we didn't have form equals compacted, the document that they get back could be in normalized form, it could be in expanded form, it could be in compacted form, right? So the reason we have form equals compacted is to ensure that JSON developers developing for this can ask for a document that they know is going to have a specific structure, you know, very simple key-value structure. So I guess that's what's on the table. Marcus, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah. So, like, compaction normally works the way that you supply a context and then the document is first expanded and then compacted by using that supplied context. But in your PasteWarm use case, you have a fixed context as far as I know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's really different, in my opinion. And what you could do there, for example, is to specify that normally the JSON-LD document has always to be returned in compacted form, and if someone would like to have it in expanded form, he can use the expanded parameter or normalized form the same. He could use that parameter.
Mm-hmm.
So you could, I mean, everything would still work, but you wouldn't need that parameter because in the end it doesn't say anything if you can't pass it also a context to which should be compacted.
So maybe so what you're saying is then maybe form equals compacted. If we were to keep it, it would have to pass. We would have to figure out some way of passing the compaction parameter.
Yes, but I think that's beyond the scope of JSON-LD because that's really an application issue. So for
right.
PasteWarm, for example, you could create another HTTP header to pass that information, for example.
Okay. So that means that it would kind of change this into a mechanism where if you just make a regular call to a JSON-LD service, it can do whatever it wants to. And the application should, you're saying in the PasteWarm spec, we should say, well, in this case, if you make a call to this web service, the configuration web service, then you must use the PasteWarm V1 JSON-LD context, and you must compact the output unless they ask for something else, like expanded form.
Yeah, I mean, like, you're defining the context anyway already in the spec, so you can also specify that the API should return the compacted version of that document. So there's not really a difference in my opinion.
All right. But why not say that the data that they're getting back is compacted?
Because it doesn't have any meaning. I mean, compacted can also mean that there are some parts are compacted and for others you don't have terms. So you still have kind of a mixed document.
Mm-hmm.
It completely depends on the context you're using.
Okay. Well, I mean, we can.
Why not just add something that makes it explicit the context which was used for compacting as another parameter? Presuming that the context is specified as an IRI, which I think the API does.
Yeah. Okay, and I guess Marcus is saying that's overkill?
That adds another level of functionality to JSON-LD, which we currently don't have or don't want to have, because otherwise we would need to specify a whole kind of service interface for JSON-LD as well. Because that is basically the definition of a web service.
Yeah. So I guess the technical issue with this is that if we specified form equals compacted and gave it an IRI in the JSON-LD syntax spec, then we would tie the syntax spec to the API spec.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to do that.
Yeah, and it would also require that every server supports that compaction with a random context, which we, at least I don't wanna have that.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, I can take that out of the PasteWarm spec, and it would still be fairly. We could still accomplish our goal, which is that we could say in the spec, well, it needs to be compacted and it needs to be and it needs to use this IRI.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why your stack should change or why your the application should change. It's just you have to add in the spec that it has to be compacted according to that context.
Okay.
That's what you're doing anyway.
Right. Any concerns or issues with this of removing form equals compact from the media type? Nicholas, sorry.
Nicholas has been trying to get in.
Sorry, Nicholas. Yeah. On a different window.
Oh, no problem. I was just thinking along your lines there. If you look at, the common case, I think, here is that you define a vendor media type, which is just an opaque media type, which then itself defines what it means and describes and somehow documents that it is represented by JSON-LD. But if you look at the first example there where I use JSON-LD semicolon context equals and then a URI, we could define that. That wouldn't mean that any service supporting that have to look up that value. I mean, it's basically the same as with link headers. It's just documentation. So that's a way to say that JSON-LD will normally be application-specific, which it, if you use a context, it will. And if you want to negotiate on a specific form, you could be specific about it in that way. It wouldn't put any demand on servers at all, really, other than that if they want to, they can be explicit about which context forms they support by customized media type recognition.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing here is that the client requests that document to be compacted with a specific context. It's not that the server is specifying that it was compacted with that context.
No, but it's for the negotiation. I mean, the client doesn't request that the server on the fly uses a specific context it picks, i.e. the client picks, but the client is very specific about what data it wants, and the server could say, yes, I have this, or no, I don't have this.
Of what level?
Yeah,
it
could just provide something completely different. I mean, the server doesn't have to listen. It's a request from the client that it would prefer to get it in that form, but the server doesn't have to respond back with anything in that form. The other issue, Nicholas, here is that in PaceWorm specifically, we want people to be able to add other contexts. So what we really say is you should use the PaceWorm V1 context as your base context, but you can layer things on top of it as long as the thing that you layer on top of it doesn't conflict with the PaceWorm V1 context, right?
They extend it, but they should still be of the first form, of the base context form.
Yes, I think. Were you clarifying?
Well, if you in your base context definition say, for instance, that you don't use at ID, but you use URL, then they could in their own context add their own terms, but they would not be allowed to redefine what URL means.
Right. Yep.
Because if you used a media type, if the clients ask for a media type looking like that, you could decide to serve those customized JSON-LD documents as well, because by your application definition, they will be of that form and more. Just as you would serve that data with this even more imprecise version.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you would not serve, well, you would, it would be up to you to decide if you would serve something like that.
Right. Also, kind of keep in mind that the context is specified in the document that's returned to them. So it might be that this is somewhat, you know, redundant, other than the client basically requesting. I mean, this would be a client request that the context used is that, and then the server would respond back with, you know, whatever it wanted to.
Yeah, but my only perspective was on the contract regarding content negotiation.
Right. Okay. So all of this said, Nicholas, I don't know if that was necessarily an argument for or against removing form equals compacted.
It was basically for removing it, because I agree that it tells you nothing really. The specificity you need isn't really fulfilled by form compacted, but it might be fulfilled by this, well, if you add context or something else or a vendor media type. But so you should think about that in the PasteForm application to see which approach suits you best, and perhaps formulate, either use a vendor media type, and then it wouldn't affect us at all. But if it would be considered usable for other people to think along the same lines, we could add that, something like an advice regarding this.
And I think we're going to avoid vendor media types just because we don't want it. We want it to be a little more webby than that, so vendor media types are something that we don't really want to do. We'd like to just use the JSON-LD spec as is instead of, you know, adding stuff on top of it.
Yeah.
I
think that it might be value for others to use something like the examples I've added here, because, and it's just a negotiation. It's up to every application to support it or not, and it would not be specified any rules about that. This would just be normative information about good ways to do services by restricting the shapes of JSON-LD for your specific application.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what we were trying to do with this is we were trying to make it so that there would be a way for the client to be very explicit about what it expected from the server. But I'm convinced now that both your and Marcus's arguments are correct. That it doesn't really, it doesn't do that. It doesn't go far enough. And the problem with that is that now we have to fall back to, well, it needs to be in the PasteForm spec, or it needs to be, it's defined per application. And that, I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing or not, because that means that then somebody needs to go off and read a spec to figure out what exactly this data that they're getting back from the server is. But I guess in that case, what they would do is they would ask for normalized data back and just apply their own context if they want it in a specific form using the API. So I think that the goal is still there. The capability to basically to form the data into what you want it to be is still there. Okay. So the proposal is to remove form equals compacted from the MIME type for JSON-LD. Anyone opposed to that? All right. So there's the proposal. All right, so that's resolved. Let's see. All right, it's 11:55. I think the, I forget, I don't really know what the telecom bridge does when we hit our time limit, so let's not tempt fate and end the call now. Okay, great call, everyone. Thank you so much for staying on the call extra long. I know it's difficult to take this much time out for this kind of stuff, but so we've whittled this down to just a handful of issues. All of them really have to do with kind of providence and I guess some other. Providence is a big thing. Multiple graph syntax is a big thing. So let's try and discuss those on the mailing list over the next week, and then hopefully come to the discussion next week with something that we can kind of move forward on.